Hello and welcome to this special episode of the Bloodstream Podcast. My name is Patrick James Lynch alongside co-host
Amy Borg.
Oh, Amy, where were you on that one? We're doing a
podcast. I don't know. I didn't know I was supposed to come in on that one. I'm a noob. I'm a total noob.
Right off the bat, Amy. All right, well, that's fine. So Amy and I are here today. I think last time we told everybody we'd be coming back after NHF's conference, and that will be the next more traditional styled episode. But we have a really cool program. You've heard us talk about it plenty, Breaking Through, which highlights the importance and value of the arts, and in particular, the arts within our community. Well, July 31st, our show, Hemophilia the Zoomsicle, as it has become in 2020, like everything else, that takes place on July 31st. And we want to welcome anyone watching, or listening rather, to watch on July 31st. But we also wanted to use this opportunity to bring our creative core in to talk a little bit about what's been a most unusual process. And we have people who have been with this program for two plus years, people who came in this year, and all of us had to together figure out how to adapt to this program in a most unusual set of circumstances. So we thought this would be a great opportunity just before we all really said goodbye to this year's program to get together and sort of enjoy this moment as a group. Before Amy and I as theater nerds jump into hosting this conversation with Jessica Lauren Richmond, Catherine Lerner, and Paul Russell, I want to let you know that this special episode today is made possible by our sponsor, Genentech, and to let you know that they are announcing their new website, GenentechHemophilia.com. This website's designed to connect the community and highlight educational support programs. It's also a place where you can watch their web series, Challenge Accepted. Sign up for workshops and hear stories from the community. Visit GenentechHemophilia.com, or you can click the link in the program notes. Amy, as I mentioned, you, like me, are a theater nerd, have a theater background. Before we welcome our guests, can you give the audience just a little overview of your history in the theater?
My parents they forced me to audition for a community theater production of The Hobbit.
Most of the stories start, though, in fairness.
100%. And I was the weird dramatic kid, you know, like I would come down the stairs and my dad would come home from work. He'd be like, "Hi, Amy." And I'd be like, "It's not Amy, it's Victoria," or something. You know, I was definitely that kid.
Yes.
And so it was just a natural thing. They were like, no, do this. And it was a musical version of The Hobbit, like Gollum sang a couple songs.
Oh, good for him.
And I know, it was great. And I fell in love with it. And so my mother actually very lovingly found a children's musical theater company in Littleton, Colorado, where I grew up right after that experience. And I just didn't do anything since. I have my BFA in music theater, and then I did music theater professionally for like 9 years before I went into the nonprofit space. So it is very beloved. So when I was the executive director of the Colorado chapter of the National Hemophilia Foundation, when I got the flyer the first time about Breaking Through, that you guys were looking for kids to audition and to apply, I lost my mind. I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I was like, why haven't people done this before? It was charming and it was wonderful. And it's so important. It changed my life, made me who I am.
Well, I think there's a few other people who might share that sentiment to one degree or another. So with that, welcome our musical director, Paul Russell, our director, Catherine Lerner, and our, I don't know, producer, project manager, everything person, Swiss Army knife of a creative member, Jessica Lauren Richmond. Hello to you three.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Paul, joining us from the UK, thank you for extending your Saturday to be with us today. Do you remember the moment that you first clicked with theater when it became that thing, I think as Amy put it, where there was just like really no looking back?
Yes, it was actually a little later than I think most people would think. I had a very classical music childhood with viola and piano and clarinet. And over in the UK, the ABRSM, the Royal Associated Board of Music, wants to get, there's 8 grades, and to go above grade 5, you have to do your music theory to show that your knowledge of music is as competent as your performance ability, and you have to sing. And I come from a very celebratory family, so dancing and singing and my family is just not quiet, so there was always noise going on. So it kind of made sense that I'd be either playing a viola piece or squeaking on a clarinet somewhere. And we had to sing. And I just remember this lady, oh my goodness. So, you know, South Park, Cartman's mum?
Yes.
Her pianist, English, very like this, with this big bun. She had this amazing, like, I actually have complete hair envy now I think about her bun. And I remember she would sing scales and you'd have to repeat them back, and we were going around our group. And then I just sang, and she's like, "Goodness, Russell, that's a loud instrument you have." And then that's kind of how it started. And then at school, I decided to join the school choir, of which I wasn't successful for two tries, because I was told that I was too loud, and quote unquote, I have a voice like a foghorn.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I just didn't let it stop me, because I really enjoyed it. And so then went, did a school play when I was probably 10, 11, 12, something like this. And then was allowed into the choir. And then that just started the bug. And so yeah, my childhood was a lovely marriage of classical music, orchestras, and then jazz hands and all of this, and doing all the acting. And so then, yeah, that's how it happened. Then I went to study at Conservatoire in London with music and acting, and then had a lovely career doing West End shows and musicals and world tours and all these fun things before finding my home, coming back to music roots, actually, but with a clear tone, and the umbrella is theatre. Yeah, and so now I musically direct things and coach things. So yeah, it was through being told that I have a voice like a foghorn, Russell.
I love that, though. I think you can't have a career in the arts, or even like just a high school career in the arts, without having massive disappointment and being told something about you personally that you have to persevere. No one has a story without it. You didn't make the choir, you didn't get this part that you wanted, someone was chosen over you. And it's a part of the beauty of the arts, is learning how to deal with that massive disappointment.
And then coupled sometimes with like disappointment, and then adults who are not appropriate in the way that they're communicating maybe a necessary critical note to a young person. Paul's story reminds me of one of our cast members who early on was sharing, we were kind of talking about prior theater experiences and how she had really been shut down by, I think it was a school director, maybe a community theater director, but like, you know, just really shut down. I forget exactly the language that was used. It wasn't appropriate. And you could see in her telling the story. And I was just so thankful she found us and, you know, made the point that we're making now, which is we all have these stories. So good for you for getting back up and trying and putting yourself out there again, because if you're in the arts, unfortunately, you bump into these people, you bump into these moments. Catherine, how about for you? What was the moment that theater became a track that you were inevitably going down?
Well, let's see. Well, when I was 10 years old, I auditioned for like a community theater kind of a show. And it was a place where you could get, you could take classes, like acting classes, but then there was also shows that you could audition for. And I remember one of the classes I was in, I played the little princess from the movie, and I like loved it so much. And then one of the teachers in the audience like came up to my mom and was like, "She should do this." And my mom was like, "All right." my mother's a brilliant mathematician, and my father's a physicist. So they were very much.
There was no push against, like, I'm interested in the arts, you brainiac folks.
I mean, I was 10, and like many things, if I wanted something, I just needed to like prove to my parents I had the time for it. So, like, example, I really wanted a cat, and so they were like, "Okay, how can we know that you will be able to like feed and like do the litter stuff?" So, like, I would like wake up 15 minutes before I would need to, and I would like feed an imaginary cat. And I would like show them, or like, you know, or I would like get like into pajamas 15 minutes early, and I would like clean the imaginary litter, And so then I would be like, look, like, this is what I'm doing. And so very similarly, it was like, okay, if I'm going to do drama or if I'm going to like have rehearsal, that's going to be like an hour a day or 2 hours a day. Can I get my homework done by like five or by instead of seven? And so like auditions for the community theater shows, I believe would be like September 30th. So I would have like 30 days to like show my parents, like I can get my homework done by like five, which means that I can do like rehearsal for 2 hours. So yeah. And so then came audition time. If I had been able to show them that I could do both, then it was like, yeah, go have fun. So yeah, it was pretty great.
I like how your lobbying for a cat was also your auditioning for future theater productions and showing them the skill that you had to look, a cat is here, everyone. I'm right. Caring for it responsibly.
Yeah, so that also like vibe work of like, this is, so yes, object work at a very young age. But yes, like I just kept loving it. And that's the thing, my parents kept checking in because they wanted to be like, if you don't like it, like very happy to do something else, you know? And so I think they were just very worried of like me getting into like the kid, the kid theater world, and some of the parents were very intense. And so right. I were just always like, are you having fun? Like, is this fun for you? And I was like, yes. And so they were like, okay. So yeah, I basically did community theater between ages 10 through like 16. And then 16 through 18, I like basically wanted to be part of the drama club in my high school. And so then I like kind of transitioned to that. And then like my last year of high school, someone finally told me like, oh, you know, you can like major in this as in college. And I was like, what? And I remember going to the guidance counselor and being like, hey, I just found out that I could major in acting and musical theater. I think I want to. And the guidance counselor looked at me and said, but you're so smart. And I went, what? He was like, do you really want to do that? You're so smart though. And I was like, what? So yes, but I will remember that for all time that I was so excited to tell her that I found this out. And then she was just like, very much, you don't want to do this.
Yeah, enter Ring Cloud. Yeah, I once had someone say that to me as well, but I thought you were so smart, except it was my great aunt and it was about my getting this tattoo.
Oh, so, no.
Slightly different circumstances, but a similar moment of like, well, okay, there's other ways you could have expressed your non-approval of that, but we'll just let that go. I'm fine now. Jessica, you grew up in Los Angeles where film and television and life in front of the camera is as much of the entertainment backdrop as theater, if not much more so. Although there's more theater in LA than people, I think, realize. What was your experience growing up in the world of make-believe? Was it a little bit more in film and on sets and that whole rigmarole, or was it balanced with theater? What about your growing up?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, as some may not know, but I'm now going to announce, Patrick and I went to the same theater conservatory, and we had a great professor, Yves Mousson, who said there should be no such thing as a dumb actor. The required intelligence of a performer to hold the energy of a room, let alone deal with script content, let alone manage their own personal life so that they can show up fully present on stage or on set. It takes a lot of intelligence.
A shout out to Yves Mousson. That was a great...
Yves Mousson. And you know, I'm not answering your question, sorry, but on the note of lousy people in leadership for theater giving bad notes to kids, Eve was the opposite, but man, was she tough. It was so great to have someone in leadership in theater who was like, but why are you doing it? Why are you showing up? Why are you here? Like, if you're gonna be here, let it be everything that matters to you. And with that sense of like, if you're showing up to do a presentation, it should be what matters the most. Theater and on-set life was an ever-present part of my youth. Stage door theater, Gail Trumbow in Agora Hills, taught me what downstage and upstage was, and like did my first Shakespeare in fourth grade, and loved that I could come out as Kate from Taming of the Shrew and yell at the adults, basically. Like all these characters gave voice for a very young, precocious to me. And then set life was something also introduced very young. I have family in the industry, so I was on set and I just saw the team dynamic and the groupthink dynamic that happens when everyone's focused on a production. And it was ever present, so in a way I feel like it wasn't something I sought out, but I certainly could have chosen another route and there was no way I was going to.
And when did you find your interests were as a performer, as a director, as a writer? Because I think too, when growing up, talking about the arts, but specifically in theater, I don't know that all the different disciplines and ways in which you can apply yourself creatively to make art happen in the theater or in film and television are evident to people right away. We actually had Paul, we had an interesting experience of that, Jessica, as you might remember too, in New York, when we had a number of friends of producers we knew in New York bring in people who worked front of house and company manager and stage manager, and just talking about the different experience, not only what they do, but their colleagues as well. And you could see the cast members from the 2018 group really learning from just being exposed to all these different people who make the thing go. Do you remember when you started getting interested in the different elements of making make-believe real?
I do, because I was at BU and I was trying to switch my major from acting to theater arts to explore more disciplines. And hilariously contradictory to the stereotype, my parents were like, no, you've always loved acting. You are going to finish your discipline in acting. There was like a great support. But my interest began there, and it took till post-collegiate life during the WGA strike in Hollywood of 2008 to really start exploring what it meant to make your own content or to embed oneself as a performer in the holistic production crew so that you could see how many pieces are moving at all times. So post-collegiate is the short answer.
I think it has been interesting the last 10, 15 years working professionally as technology and opportunity has shifted pretty radically. Because I remember when we would talk in school about creating our own work and theater ensemble and building from the collective, and then thinking like, yeah, but to like make it as an actor is something different. You're supposed to like go to these auditions, you get an agent, and then you do this thing. But noticing that that was beginning to shift pretty substantially as we were getting out of school and entering the working world. It's neat to think how it just has continued to expand and opportunities have continued to expand, I think, for young creatives who maybe didn't have access in the way that so many do now in one way or another to storytelling. You know, something that I find, sorry, Jessica, go ahead.
I was just gonna bring up that we had that in our group this year in 2020, our cast, how there were some participants who weren't there primarily as performers, who were musicians or interested in the holistic part of production.
You can see it yourself, July 31st, Hemophilia, the Zoomsicle, invitations on Facebook. You're probably following one of us on Facebook if you're listening to this. And if you're not, just start. I found for me that theater filled something I'd been seeking in sports and in extracurriculars. And it was a sense of identity and community and teamwork outside of the structure of school and stuff that like adults prescribed. It wasn't available to me in sports in the way that it was for a lot of other kids. But as soon as I found theater, I realized, oh, this is all here too. And then it started to serve this really intimate part of myself. And I think a lot of people in the arts, there's something that it serves that's really intimate. And there's a connection that goes well beyond the craft and talent and it's fun and whatever else. There's something very, very personal. Paul, do you have?
Yes. I think community, having a community at some point outsiders come together and be insiders. That really happened for me at Rose Bruford, where I trained. That really is where it happened, that I was with outstanding, amazing people who were so dedicated and everything was so inclusive. And so, you know, that whole thing of you find a family, you find your community. That's definitely where theater hit home for me. And, you know, I'm very fortunate. I've got a loving, gorgeous family who I'm very, very tight and close with. But, you know, just being able to truly express and play was just, yeah, so about the age of 18. And I think it's so interesting, things that I've heard for from all of these, all our anecdotes and like our biographies, I suppose, is discipline. I think there's a level of discipline. That was a really beautiful thing that kind of segues from my classical approach of music into the arts and with sport, with academics, with all these different things. Dance, there's all this discipline. So yeah, theater brought for me discipline and community and just a freedom and encouragement to continuously play. So yeah, 18.
So, you know, that's it. You know, it's interesting. So we're all now also in positions where we're not only to whatever degree each of us practitioners and working artists in that way, but we're teachers and directors and mentors and in these positions of creating opportunities for others. Catherine, maybe for you, when did that start? When did that role of facilitating for others begin for you? And maybe if there's anything about facilitating within breaking through that would be notable to comment on.
Well, I guess I kind of started teaching at a young age because by the time I was like in high school, I did like very small workshops and stuff with kids that were my age when I first got into this, right? So like with 10-year-olds and stuff. And then I just kind of kept growing. And I think it's the idea of structured play and community at the same time. So, you know, when you're dealing with children, and when I say that, I really mean like kind of below age 12, you know, you realize it's the kids that like during their recess, they choose instead of like the jungle gym, they're going to be in the corner and they're going to be fairies. They're going to be in the jungle. They're going to be under the sea. Like, it's like they already have this beautiful imagination that then as a teacher or facilitator, you can just kind of very gently mold into Alice in Wonderland, into whatever, you know, into whatever story, because they're already so apt for make-believe and turning into other characters, and they have such an amazing imagination. Somewhere along the way, around, I will say, teenage years, you know, judgment and worry about what other people think or how you look to others kind of come in. And that's a very interesting role to play as a facilitator, of like being very gentle with that and understanding that that is a part of growing up, but also being able to show them how beautiful it is to be uniquely them, to make a mistake in front of others, to show others that, you know, you make a mistake, you do something silly, and then at the end of the day, your cast, your team, your ensemble, your class still has your back, still is excited to see what you come up with. You know, we talk about community so much in theater, and we talk about how your castmates become some of your best friends. And I really believe it's because they see you almost every day failing. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really think about it, right, you see someone forget their lines, you see someone fall down after trying, you know, a double pirouette, you see someone crack on a song, and you see it over and over and over and over until one magical day you see them succeed and you scream usually with joy when that person hits that note, when they land that turn, when that entire monologue went perfect without, you know, a pause. And I really believe that's part of it. I believe part of it is being okay to fail in front of these people because you know that you're all going toward a magical goal of telling the same story for others to be able to relate. And all of a sudden you kind of become this very strong unit of people that you trust and that you love, because not only were you able to succeed when they succeeded, but you were also able to understand your failures through theirs as well. And I really believe that's why casts become family.
And what's been neat is to see how that happened even through our most unusual Zoom-based 3-month sporadic spread out, we've never met in person process, to the point where, as we know, in the last couple of weeks, there's been like a panic freak out of like, how do we stay in touch? What do we do? How do we, we're never going to know each other again. And all those things that we experience going through it in person in the more traditional way. I think it says a lot about how we've been able to execute the program, that all of those end of show, the family is breaking up, it's coming to an end, what do we do? All that really normal, high emotional stuff is still happening in this unusual format. Jessica, I'm curious for, you know, we talk a lot about the benefits of the arts, the therapeutic, the healing, social growth power of the arts and all of that. But I'd be curious to hear from you in your words. You've worked on this program intimately. You've worked in many different programs that have utilized the arts and creativity in dynamic and interactive and multimedia type ways. I'm curious to hear, and for just from your own words, why are the arts important for young people especially to engage with?
So the arts in different mediums are great. They're mediums. The arts are mediums, are conduits, are channels by which to self-express. Oh gosh, do I say this? I guess I say this. You know how sometimes you need a pet to go in and get their anal glands expressed?
Okay.
Like, a healthy life. Expression of self is like imperative to health. I know, stay with me. It's like, it's gotta come out. It's gotta come out. As we all are finding in lockdown, how much energy can get stuck in an individual in relational dynamics. Like, we need to move energy around. We need to express self. And it's just healthy. It's just like going to the groomers. I don't know.
Wow. I have to say, I asked for it in your own words. And boy, oh boy, is that what you delivered. Thank you, Jessica. That was really beautiful.
I think it was succinct though. It was very accurate and very succinct. Just my thought.
Just from your chair. Amy, as I'm conscious of our time, I would love to hear from your chair. I know we have a lot of community parents who listen and community advocates, people who like you are in leadership positions at a local patient advocacy organization, people who are connected to young people who are affected by bleeding disorders, who are having trouble with fitting in at school because they can't play sports, or who are having experiences like those that we reference when talking about a program like this. What would you have to say to those leaders and parents and community folks about why something like Breaking Through, why engaging in local community arts is important for their child or young person?
Well, just to piggyback on what Jessica said about expressing yourself, I think that's very important. And I think the ability to try as many things as possible is what is very special about those middle school and high school years. There is a wealth of things that young people can engage in. And the disappointment and the shame of not being able to play sports, perhaps because of hemophilia, because of joint disease, because of fear, is something that I could imagine doesn't necessarily get expressed or dealt with in that age because of unawareness and just the inability to do so until you're older. And as a parent, I could imagine that there would be this panic of trying to be everything for your child and trying to get your child to do this. And I mean, it's just, it feels impossible.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a gift. It has been a gift for me to have my parents not panic for some of the things that I've struggled in my life. And one of the things that they very lovingly didn't panic, I think, was that I was the odd kid, just like Catherine said. I was the kid that was in the corner. It was weird. And I think, you know, struggling with the inability to play sports, if you want to do so, as a parent, to not panic and to realize that there could be a gentle push into something like this to just try it out. I think if I had my druthers, I would tell every high school student that they had to participate in the musical once, just one season. I mean, I just think it is so important. My favorite memories of choreographing high schools just were these kids that I knew were going to become engineers and, you know, teachers and, you know, these wonderful things. And they just did it for this one random, you know, semester. And they'll always remember it. And there's just something so beautiful about, like Paul said, the discipline and the accountability and the self-expression that you can kind of weasel your way into when it comes to the arts. And so for parents and for families, it's another avenue. It's just another avenue for kids to kind of wrestle with becoming who they are.
And if you have certain avenues taken away from you because of a health circumstance or a living circumstance or for any number of reasons, then it's all the more important, right? That the other avenues that are possible are, you're exposed to them, that you're exposed mm-hmm. to the arts, that you know that this is a place where you may be able to scratch that itch like I wanted to have a community and have a team and have something outside of school that made me feel okay.
I will say, just one thought, the arts are the most inclusive place that I've ever been a part of ever. And no one is weird. No one is odd. The quirks, differences are so embraced in the theater and they're celebrated in the theater. And it's definitely the place that you want to be growing up.
What that place is going to look like as we move forward here in the world is a big question mark and the topic for many other podcasts.
Yep.
But for today, July 31st is when Hemophilia, the Zoomsicle, will be streaming live on Facebook, July 31st at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it'll be through our Bloodstream Media Facebook page. Ha ha, what do you know? Cross promo. So Bloodstream Media on July 31st, Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and it will live on there thereafter. In summary, can Jessica, Paul, Catherine, can you let people know where they might be able to find you online, see more of your work, keep up with what you're doing? Jessica, Catherine, and then Paul, if you would.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Jessica Lauren Richmond at jrich.online for more info.
Yes, I'm also on Instagram, Kat Lerner, K-A-T. And I also have a website, Katharine Lerner, K-A-T-H-A-R-I-N-E, like Katharine Hepburn. And like just an actor and teacher and director and trying to figure it out all through quarantine, like everyone else.
Yes, Instagram's probably the best. So it's standing.ovation.choir. And yeah, you can see what I go about and do and do in life and create and thoughts and feelings and some politics most probably, but that's always important for theater. So that's where it's at.
Well, thank you. Thank the three of you. I mean, in the last few months have just been such a unique time and something that I don't, it's going to take a while to process. It's not over yet. It's just very, very, very close, but thank you for everything that you've given. I think the proof is in the pudding and the testimonials from the castmates, the cast members, and of course the show itself, which again, July 31st, Facebook, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Bloodstream Media Facebook page. We want to thank Genentech for making this special episode of Bloodstream and this conversation about the importance of theater and the arts possible. GenentechHemophilia.com to check out their brand new website filled with resources, workshops, and the Challenge Accepted web series. Thanks as well to Takeda, bleedingdisorders.com for more on them. Amy and I will be back after NHF's BDC next week with a wrap-up of the conference. We also might be popping on to the Facebook Live or Instagram Live throughout the conference to sort of say hi and what's up. So you'll just have to like follow along to see what's going on. That's all for now. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.